Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al. There's
always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And on this week's show, we have an interview with a guy who was one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the 1970s. He never competed in the NPC because when he was competing, it was only AAU. And his name is Pat Neve. And Pat won the Mr. USA contest out in 1974, and that was the AAU Mr. USA. And he was a short class competitor, so it was pretty impressive for him to win the overall as a short class competitor. But Pat competed in the Mr. America contest also in 1975 and 76. And he actually did compete in the IFBB in the Mr. International contest in 1979. So in addition to Pat's long history, he also made some good friendships with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Frank Zane. So we're going to hear those stories as well. So we got a really, really good interview coming up with Pat Neve, who was one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the 1970s. And I want to mention right off the bat that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 and 2018 Classic Physique Olympia champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Benoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. And I just heard this week they also signed on Chris Cormier. So welcome Chris Cormier to the Old School Labs team. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. So how is everybody doing out there in the bodybuilding world? We are now heading into our last week in January. We had a big celebration out here in Tampa, Florida called Gasparilla. If you're not familiar with it, it's like where the Pirates invaded Tampa Bay. So it's always the last Saturday in January, and it's a huge parade down Bayshore Boulevard, which is right off the water. And then they have all the boats come out and everything, so it was absolutely crazy. But the weather didn't cooperate. It was kind of cold. And not raining, but definitely colder than normal. And but we still had a lot of people out there. I had to work all day at the hospital. So I'm a little tired today because I had to work like a 13-hour day because we had to work overtime to control the crowds. But I'm glad that's over. And my training is going good. I just finished up my last power week, and I had a killer leg workout on Tuesday. They just wiped me out the whole week. I squatted 295, which is heavy for me because I haven't really squatted that heavy for a long time because of my back, but my back's been doing better. And I did 295 like 10 times, which was a lot for me. And that was after I leg pressed 1100 pounds 10 times. So I'm really having some really, really great workouts this year. I'm really happy with the way things are going, but this is my deload week. As you know, when I do these power cycles and mass cycles, I only do them for 6 weeks, and then I have a deload week where I only use 50% of my normal weight. So it's almost like taking a week off, but it really helps to energize the body. It relieves, you know, the mental stress and the physical stress of the training, and it just gives you a break. And then when I come back a week from Monday, I'll be way, way better. All right. I got some really good emails, so I'm going to read those in a minute. And also our new segment that we're doing where I'm reading an article from an old magazine. I'm going to continue that this week. And this week, I'm going to read an article from Muscle Builder and Power from February 1977. And this one is about Frank Zane. And it was written by Rick Wayne, who was one of the best writers for Joe Weider back in the 1970s. And Rick was also a great competitor as well, if you're not familiar with Rick Wayne. But This was a really good profile article on Frank Zane, and this was right before he won the 1977 Mr. Olympia. Actually, it was right after he competed in the 76 Olympia, where he took second to Franco. So it's a really good article. Gives you a good sense of what Frank Zane was all about. And one really interesting thing about this article, and one of the reasons I wanted to read it, was Frank talks about the dreams that he had. Frank was a big disciple of Carl Jung, J-U-N-G. He was a psychoanalyst. And one of the things Carl Jung did was he analyzed dreams. So Frank Zane started doing that too. And I don't know if you ever heard the stories, but every time Frank Zane won a Mr. Olympia, during that year, he would have a dream that predicted he would win the Olympia. So he talks about his dreams in this article, and he talks about the dream he had before competing in the 1975 Mr. Olympia, where he didn't do good. That was the one that was filmed for Pumping Iron. And Frank only took fourth in his class, in the under 200-pound class, between Franco and Ed Corney and Albert Beckles. And then he talks about the dream he had before the 1976 Mr. Olympia, when he took a really close second place to Franco Colombo. So it's a really, really good article. We're going to read that after our interview with Pat Neve. So be sure to stay tuned to the end of the show so you can hear that. All right, another news. The movie Bigger is now out. So those of you that didn't get a chance to see it in the movies, and it wasn't really in the movies for very long, so I'm sure a lot of people missed it. But this is the movie that was made last year, and it came out last fall, I believe. And it's the biopic about Joe Weider, about Joe Weider's life story, how he started when he grew up in Canada and he was poor, and how he started this magazine for bodybuilders and became, you know, a big success. Joe made millions of dollars, created an empire in the bodybuilding world, and really got a lot of the stuff that we take for granted today going. So that movie is now available on DirecTV. So if you have DirecTV, you should be able to order it. It's also available on DVD if you wanted to buy it. So be sure to check that out and send me some emails. Let me know what you guys think of the movie. I was actually there for part of the filming of it. If you remember, about a year and a half ago, I went out to Alabama and I saw them film the scene of the 1970 Mr. Olympia, what they filmed in Birmingham, Alabama at a theater. And Callum Van Moger played Arnold. And Sergio Oliva Jr. played his dad, Sergio Oliva. So that was really cool to see. And like I said, the movie, I think, came out in October of last year. So give me your reviews when you guys see it and let me know what you think. All right, we did get a couple emails that I wanted to read. A couple of them from Scott Barron. Scott's one of our loyal supporters of the show. He's also one of the guys who contributes to the Patreon link. If you go to my website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, I have a Patreon where you can be a Patreon and contribute to the show if you so choose. I think Scott is one of the few that does that, so I appreciate Scott's support, and he's been doing that for a while. So Scott wrote me an email last week, and he said, John, one thing is for certain. After listening to your Ed Corney tribute podcast and Jerry Branum Part 3 interview, your show has reached an even higher level of excellence. Your reading of bodybuilding historical articles has adding even greater depth or level of depth to an already great production. Bottom line, you have somehow found a way to make a stellar show even greater. Keep up the great work in preserving the rich history of the golden years of bodybuilding. All right, Scott, thank you very much. That means a lot coming from someone who's such a loyal fan of the show. So thank you. I also heard from Lee Baptiste, and Lee said, hi, John, hope all is well. I love the show this week with Jerry. Jerry and you are the encyclopedia of bodybuilding. I really love to listen and having Jerry on to share more of his old school stories. In terms of the next guest, how about Danny Padilla? I would love to hear from him. Also, Frank Zane, Lou Ferrigno would be cool as well. I would love to hear Albert Beckles as well, since he is around 88 now. I hear and hear about his training background, etc. I love this show. Yeah, I should try to get a hold of Danny again. We did do an interview with Danny about a year ago with Jim Rockell. He's hard to get a hold of. He never answers my emails on Facebook. But sometimes when I talk to Jim, Jim talks to him for me. But I guess he's just training people out there in Rochester, New York. So he's busy doing that. But I'll just keep trying to get him. Frank Zane, I really haven't reached out to yet, but I will pretty soon. And Lou Ferrigno will only do the interview in person for some reason. He doesn't want to do Skype. So I have to wait till I go to California again before I'll be able to interview him if he's around. Scott Barron also sent me another email And he actually sent a message to Bob Paris. And he said, John, I hope you don't mind. And I ask for forgiveness and understanding. Bob Paris needs to be interviewed. I tried reaching out to him. And then he sent me the email that he sent to Bob Paris. And he said, Mr. Paris, my name is Scott Barron. I'm a Chicago public schools history teacher with 20 years experience. Back in 1992, I was fortunate to win a trip with Arnold, and I spent a couple of days with him on the set of Last Action Hero. We worked out at World's Gym, and I was so fortunate to be able to take a Polaroid picture with the late Joe Gold. That picture is my favorite, although I was also able to take an awesome Polaroid with Clint Eastwood on the set of In the Line of Fire. I happen to be a huge fan and a strong supporter of John Hansen's Bodybuilding Legend show. He conducts both Skype and podcast interview formats. I absolutely have no connection to the show other than being a loyal fan and a modest Patreon contributor. His show perfectly blends two of my passions, golden era bodybuilding and history. John Hansen conducts interviews with intelligence and with a deep sincerity. Many, many listeners have submitted online comments requesting that John interview you. I firmly believe it takes an intellectual such as John, who is making great strides with preserving the rich history of the art and sport of bodybuilding, to conduct an interview with you in a manner that could be summed up in one word: class. I hope that you are doing well. Please be aware that the loyal fans of John's show really, really care about your tremendous contribution to the art of bodybuilding. Personally, I would love to hear or see an interview with you, knowing that history is being preserved on this format that I strongly believe in. Scott Barron, Chicago, Illinois. All right. So that was very nice of Scott to do that. I didn't ask him to do that, but that was very nice. And hopefully Bob Paris will respond. I've tried reaching out to Bob Paris on Instagram, because he doesn't have a Facebook, and he hasn't answered any of my emails yet. So I'll just keep trying with that. All right. Before we get to our interview with Pat Neve, I want to also mention that we're brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss, where their certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. Their wide range of services ensure that you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their brand new website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, flalternativemeds.com, and mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They'll give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so thank you to Florida Alternative Medicine and also Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And here, as promised, is our interview with Pat Neve, one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the 1970s. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And my guest this week is Pat Neve. And Pat is one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the 1970s. He competed in the AAU, as well as the IFBB and the NPC and the WBBG. So he's had a really extensive career, not only as a bodybuilder, but also as a powerlifter. So it's our pleasure to welcome you to the show. How you doing, Pat?
I'm doing fine, John. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I grew up in the 1970s reading the magazines, and you were always in there. Not only one of the most impressive physiques on the national level, but I also remember you were also a top powerlifter, and you had an incredible bench press.
Well, that bench press came around just by accident. I just happened to be working out one day in the gym, and John Cole, who at that time was the world's strongest man, happened to walk in and see me benching. I think I was benching like 420, and he was as massive as he could be, and he calls me over in the corner, and I'm in shock. I'm in awe, and I walk over, and he says to me, did I just see you do 420? I said, yeah. He said, how much do you weigh? I said, 175, 180. He said, the state record's 390. I said, is it?
Wow.
and he said, you ever enter a powerlifting meet? I said, no. He said, what can you squat and deadlift? I said, I don't know. I never go my limit. Long story short, he says, go over there and try it. And of course, I'm going to do anything to a guy who's 5'10", 285 tells me to do. So I go over there, and everything's the same, man. I bench to 420, I squat to 420, I deadlift 420. And he says, well, let's get you in a powerlifting meeting. And I said, when? He said, Saturday. I said, in 3 days. He said, yeah, long story short, 3 days later, I'm in this powerlifting meet. Place is packed. I go out there. World record was 449 by Ronnie Ray. And I start out with 420, do that easy. I do 430, do that easy. Like there's no way. I never did a bench press in front of people. Having to scream made all the difference. I mean, an extra 20, 30 pounds, man. You know, I never pushed myself to my limit, so I didn't even know what I could do. And so John says, okay, it's time for the world record, 450. I said, you know, I said, no, man, those four plates scare the hell out of me, man. I don't think I want to do that. He says, well, how about 40? So I did 440 like a feather. And so I did second best in the world my first contest. Wow. And I went on from there.
Well, Pat, let's start at the beginning. I know you were born in 1947, same year Arnold was born. So what got you into bodybuilding? What got you started, and what age did you start?
Well, I started playing around like in the seventh grade, probably 13. I went to a new grade school, and I came from a grade school where I lived in a project, and you had to fight your way to the top, man. And I get to the new grade school, and it's a really nice area. And I go there, and I ask some people, well, who's the roughest guy? Who do I have to fight to get my place? And they said, fight? There's no fighting here. It's who's the best athlete? I said, well, who is the best athlete? And they said, that guy over there, Mike Patterson. So I go up to him and introduce myself, and he knows I'm new. And he says, you want to come over to my house after school? I said, yeah. He's 1 year older than me, about 20 pounds heavier. I go to his house, and we're walking in the backyard, and he steps over a barbell. And I'm right behind him. I step over it, and he stops, and he says, can you lift that? And I said, well, how? And I know now it's 115 pounds. He said, well, can you do this? And he weighs about 150. I weigh about 130. He picks it up and barely presses it. And I pick it up, and I do about five or six. And I said, like this? And he says, what the heck? He says, you're pretty strong. And I said, am I? And then, yeah, so we put it down. We go in. He shows me his parents' new, they had just bought a new Thunderbird. And then we go to his room. We start talking, and he has all these bodybuilding magazines. And I tell you, the first one I see is the cover of Larry Scott. And that was it, man. That was it. Mm-hmm. I saw that picture, and I said, oh, my God. I said, can I have this magazine? And I just took it home and read it from cover to cover.
Wow, that's awesome. It sounds like you had good genetics for bodybuilding because you just naturally were strong, right?
Always strong. Always the strongest.
Yeah.
It was God-given from the get-go. You know, when I started wrestling in high school, even before I even knew how to wrestle, it was all strength. And, I was always in the pressing move.
Yeah. Where were you born at, Pat?
New York, Manhattan.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I left New York at 6 and back here to Phoenix, Arizona. Was really fortunate.
Oh, Arizona. Okay, so you've been in Arizona since you were really young.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I started here in the, I think I was in the second grade.
So I've been here. Okay.
Everything I did is from Arizona.
Mm-hmm. So what got you involved in competing? Like, what did you do out of high school and stuff? What were your career goals?
Long story short, after high school, I had a couple of scholarships to wrestle. My coach wanted me to put on some weight, so I said, go to the gym and start working out. We didn't have weights in high school. Our coach was a national champion, and he didn't believe in lifting weights. One day he said to me, if you lift some weights, I'll kick you off the team. And
wow, unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. I was lifting on behind his back at my friend's home. But anyhow, I joined the gym, and so I walk in the gym, and the first person who signs me up was the current Mr. Arizona. So he signs me up, and he tells me to go out back and dress up to work out. And I go back there, and he happens to walk by when I'm getting undressed. And he says, man, you have a good build. And I swear to God, I looked at him. I said, I do? And I just, my guy, I couldn't believe how he looked. I said, I do? And he said, yeah, man. And he starts taking me through a workout like a novice. at the time, I'm benching close to 380 or something. And he said, man, you're strong as heck. Do you want to start working out with me? I said, when? He said, tomorrow. So, yeah, we started working out. About 6 months later, he said, you need to get into Mr. Phoenix. I said, no, man, that's not me. No, I'm not. I don't like showing off. I feel very uncomfortable doing that. He said, no, man, it's a sport, Pat. I said, no, man, I can't do that. But every day he kept pushing me and pushing me. And then some guys around the gym started betting against me because I'm the youngest guy at the gym. They call me young fellow. Hey, young fellow, you going to enter the contest? And so a long story, I entered the contest, and lo and behold, I won. And
wow.
Yeah, I was shocked. Till this day, I can't even remember when they call my – when they're calling the people out. They say, here's the top five. I just figured I got like six. Yeah, they go on fifth, fourth, third, second, and first, and they call my name. Someone taps me on my shoulder and said, you won. I said, I won. And yeah, that was the beginning of the end, man.
Yeah, yeah. So how old were you when you went into that first contest and you won?
Well, I think I was almost 19. I was about 18. It's right out of high school. Mm-hmm. And as green as you could be, didn't know nothing, didn't take nothing. This is the gospel truth, man. I mean, a couple of days before the show, I told my girlfriend, maybe I should stop eating these bologna sandwiches.
Total novice. Unbelievable.
Oh, gosh.
And so did you ever have any aspirations of competing at the higher level? You know, because when you saw that magazine with Larry Scott on it and stuff, did you ever think, this is what I want to do? I want to be a top bodybuilder?
No. I tell you the truth.
Really? Okay.
On it, it's just one contest at a time. Mm-hmm. I never let my mind in. So then I started competing and winning a bunch of things. And then this gentleman, his name was Franklin Page. He was from in the East Coast. And he writes Vicky and I a letter, flies out and meets us, wants to send us to all these shows. So that's how I got to be known on the East Coast. And I was winning most of these regionals, Mr. North America, Mr. Eastern America. He paid my way to these shows. And because I would have never been able to afford to go to the shows. We had no money. You know, we were just living paycheck to paycheck. And so then, I don't know, I had a man train me who had a PhD, and I never told anyone. I'm winning all these shows. And finally, one day, I tell this Dr. Cole, I said, Mr. Cole, I haven't told no one, but I think I could win Mr. USA. And he looks at me and he says, Pat, you don't know what it takes to win Mr. USA. And I'm thinking, why would he say that? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just started training for the Mr. USA. And in 1972, it was in Denver. My wife and I and some friends drive over there. And I took 11th place and won best arms. And and Jim Morris wins. And what's really strange, after he wins, he comes over and starts talking to me. And he says, I thought you should have placed in the top 10. I'm thinking, why would this winner talk to me? And because this is my first national show. And he's saying, I thought you should have been in the top six. And I won best arms. And he said, man, you have incredible arms. And we started talking and everything. He's asking me, do I do this? Do I do that? And I hadn't done nothing. And he said, well, Bill Pearl trains me. And Mr. Pearl wants you to call him.
And I said, really? Wow. Wants to
call him. I'm standing there 11th place, depressed I didn't place in the top 10. And I'm talking to the winner of the contest, and Bill Pearl wants to talk to me. And that's, I think that was the moment my bodybuilding career took a big change.
Wow, that's amazing. So yeah, how did Bill Pearl know about you?
Yeah.
He saw you in the contest.
Just right there, saw me in the show. He had trained Jim Morris. And from that moment, I was a 72. I skipped 73, and 74, I went back and won the overall Mr. USA.
Wow, that's amazing. Oh, so, unbelievable.
So that PhD who trained so many people, so it was in the paper before I got home, so he already knew. But when Vicky and I land, we're driving home. I tell my wife, I got to do something. And I go to Dr. Cole's home, and I knock on his door, and he opens the door. And he looks at me, and he's going to congratulate me. But before he could open his mouth, I said, you'll never know what it takes to win Mr. USA. And he looked at me, yep, you're right, Pat. Hmm. And I think that's the same mentality I had in all my businesses, you know. Mm-hmm. Just hard work will get you where you want to be, you know, just hard work. And,
right. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what Bill Pearl did for you. Because now, did you go to Bill Pearl's gym and train? Because you lived in Arizona and he was in California.
In California, no. I went there a couple of times, never trained there, just letters back and forth. Met him, talked to him 5 or 6 times, talked to him on the phone, wrote me a great letter telling me certain things, and just an inspiration. I never met a man like him. I mean, how he took a liking to me and why, to this day, I never know. It just fantastic, you know, just a fantastic man. No, I've never seen a bone structure like his. I just want you to say, just want to tell you that, man, what a bone structure this man has.
I know. What an incredible genetics he had, right?
When he reached out to shake my hand, his damn wrists were bigger than my biceps. I mean, I'd say, oh, my goodness. They helped him get my eyes off his wrist.
Yeah. Yeah, not only a great physique, but like you said, just such a great gentleman. He helped out so many people. He trained so many people. And, you know, just the fact that he reached out to you and you were unknown.
I don't even know why. Obviously, he must have thought I had some potential or something, but why had Jim Morris, both of them. I mean, Jim Morris, after that 73 contest, calls me up and says, anytime you want to come to California, I'll show you around. So Vicky and I call him up, and we say, we're coming on. He picks us up and takes us to meet Arnold 2 weeks before the 73 Mr. Olympia.
Really? What was that like?
Oh, my gosh. It's something I'll never forget because, like I said, it's 2 weeks before the Olympia. And I told Jim I'd like to, you know, meet Arnold. And we're driving in the car. Jim's driving. I'm in the passenger seat and Vicky's in the back. And Jim looks at me and he says, okay, Pat, I'll take you to meet Arnold. But I just want you to know one of two things are going to happen. I said, what do you mean? He says, you're going to see him and you're going to say, I can never look like this and I'm going to quit. Or you're going to say, I'm going to do everything I can and try to look as close to this. He said, but just remember, there's only one of him. Now, I've never seen nothing like that. So how do you know how to compare? It's just like when I first bought my Ferraris, no one knows what a Ferrari drives like unless you drive one.
You know? Yeah.
And I never seen a Schwarzenegger, and I at that time I hadn't drove a Ferrari, so I don't know. It was Mr. America's. I mean, I'm close to these guys at that time. What could this guy look like? So we walk in the Gold's Gym, and we walk in, and we see Zane and Ken Waller and Dave Draper. And over in the corner, it's Arnold 2 weeks before the Olympia, 73, in a tank top, shorts, no shoes, doing curls across the gym. And I look, I'm standing, Vicky sits down, and I'm standing, I'm looking over there at him, and I'm thinking, oh, he's not as tall as I thought he would be. And then Jim Morris goes over to him, and he must say something, you know, Pat Nevis here to see you. And Arnold say something like, you know, in one minute. And so he puts the bar down, and he comes walking towards me. And as he's walking towards me, he's getting bigger, wider, ripped, cut, phenomenal. I'm getting smaller and smaller. Want to shrivel up and die. He comes over. He reaches out to shake my hand. I can hardly, I don't want him to see my arm. I don't even want to touch his hand. I shake his hand, I shake hand, and he says, I finish up. That's when he had a real, real thick accent. I finish up. I talk to you, Pat. We go get lunch. And so he goes and does a few more things. He turns around, walks away. I point to his calves. I look at Vicky. I said, look. And the giant calves look like grapefruits. He's walking away. And this Jim Morris said, man, I collapse on this bench. I collapse on this bench, and I look at Vicky, and I say, I can never look like that. You know how they say behind every man is a good woman? Well, she turned to me, John, and she said, that's exactly what you look like, but a smaller version. She said, "Wow, thick chest, those fantastic arms and delts." She said, "That's exactly what you look like in a tank top, except smaller." And she said, "All you do is be the best short man you could be." And at that moment, that's what I tried to be. I never thought I'd be Schwarzenegger. I just thought, man, I just push myself to be as good as I can, you know. And so that's how I met him. We went out to dinner. Then he's the first person to call me up when I won Mr. USA. The first person.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're at dinner, my wife and I and the kids, the phone rings. I pick it up. I say, "Hello." And the voice goes, "Hello, bot. This is Arno." And I said, "Who?" He says, "Arno." And I said, "Again, I can't understand him." I said, the third time, I said, "Who?" He goes, "Arnold Schwarzenegger, man, you deaf." Oh, my heart's pumping a million miles an hour. I can't believe Arnold Schwarzenegger is calling me. And he says, "Congratulations," you know, in his thick accent. "Congratulations, I'm proud of you, you know. How would you like to guest pose with my Mr. California?" So I just won the night before. I don't know nothing about how much they charge. I don't know nothing. And so he says, "How would you like to get posed on my show? I pay you away. I take your expenses. How much you want?" I'm too scared to say. I don't even know what to say. You know, in my mind, at the time, I'm thinking, you know, $1,000. But it's Arno, man. I don't know what to say. So I say, "Well, I'll come for $500. And this is his exact words. He says, "500? Hey, man, you better get a manager, because you need to get $750 to $1,000. I said, "How about $750? He says, "Okay." And so he brought me to California, and then got a good reception there. And he we set up a few seminars together, he and I. And
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, from there, he and I became real close, worked out many, many times together, did TV, did many shows, guest posed together, did lots of stuff. I wish we had cell phones, have pictures of all of us, but we did it.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So when you guys went out to dinner in 73, what was that like? What did he eat? Like, what were you talking about? This is the first time you ever met him.
The main thing, John, I really know is, first of all, everyone says this. I mean, he loved life from the moment. I never saw him depressed ever. I never saw him. He just, this is like 2 weeks before the Olympia. And we just ate meat. It's like we all did back then. He's still eating meat. I'll tell you something, man. The way I know Arno, I think he could eat dirt at that time and turn it into muscle. I never see anyone respond. You know, he called me up. He was here in Phoenix making a movie in Tucson called The Villain with Anne Margaret. He calls up, wants to work out at John Cole's gym. He looks like he couldn't win Mr. Phoenix. I mean, he looks so below average. And 6-7 months later, he wins the 80 Mr. Olympia. He went from looking like an average guy to beating, you know, Frank Zane and Mike Mensah and all those guys.
Unbelievable.
Whatever he took, whatever he ate, what a phenomenal response that man had. I mean, just incredible.
Yeah, I just had Jerry Branham on the show last week, and that's what he was saying too. He said he never seen anyone respond like Arnold did.
But no one. I mean, I'm telling you the truth, man. He didn't work out as hard as me. He just worked out, did everything soft and slow and good style. And I mean, to God, just respond like I never seen.
Wow. Well, that's great that he was so kind to you and stuff, and you guys became such great friends. That's really awesome.
Well, we did a Christmas signing of one of his books at a mall, and they expected like 500 people, and 5,000 people came.
Jeez.
Arno, they pick us up in a limousine, and they drop us off, and they're supposed to give Arno like $1. First of all, they paid him. I don't know what they paid him, but then they give him $1 extra for every autograph poster he signs. So when we early get in, and he's thinking there's going to be 500. When he finds out there's 5,000, he wants $5 a picture. He don't care if you're the president. He'll walk right up to you. I mean, as soon as he realized there's so many people, he said, "Pot, I know do this for $1. I said, no, man, no. And he walked over. He's telling the lady in charge, I want $5 or I leave. You know? And so he always took command. I mean,
yeah.
What a personality, man. What a motivational, positive, greatest attitude in the world. Wow. Very complimentary to me, very much. Well, he wanted to make sure that everyone knew that he was better than me, which he was. We all know that. We did a seminar, then we did a TV show that night, and he was tired, and I was the guest poser. And the guy introducing us, interviewing us, wanted to know what was the difference between Arnold and I. So Arnold says, just let me just tell you, I'm the best bodybuilder in the world. And Pat Neve, he's world class. He's fantastic. But, you know, he's Pat Neve. I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger. I thought to myself, why would you say that? You know, I mean, I said, why don't you tell him how much stronger I am than you, Arnold? I'm thinking, what the heck? I said, but and I'm just a peasant, but fun times. I mean, he would dance. They'd have these these parties after we guest pose. He would with these girls all night. I mean, funniest thing to see Schwarzenegger dancing because he couldn't dance with shit. I mean,
right.
No, to see him dance, that big old body dancing was
right.
I mean, I could have got a fortune if I had it on tape.
right. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, he does love life though. He's always an inspiration to be around.
To the fullest, man. To the depth. You know what? One day, one more story, John, real quick about Arnold and I. We do our last show. He's already retired. I'm about a year away from retiring. And we go to this restaurant. Mm-hmm. And we sit down and we order the food. And we're sitting there. And I look at him and I said, Arnold, what are we going to do when we retire? He says, we're going to get rich, Pot. We are? He said, yeah, we're going to get rich. I said, how? I said, how? And he said, well, we'll figure it out, but we're going to get rich. And somehow we managed to work our way into that.
Yeah. Before we talk about your Mr. USA win, which I want to talk to you about from 1974, tell us a little bit about your profession, Pat, because I know you got into selling cars, right?
Yeah. After I sold the gym in like 1985, well, first of all, I'm trying to retire, but to bodybuilding people, they can understand this. I'm talking about retirement. I go back to the NPC. I take second to Lee Haney and these guys. And I'm 35 years old. I told Vicky, man, I gotta retire. And I tell the guys at the gym, but every time I take a shower, they'd run back there. Oh, man, you look great. You look great. You need to continue. And I'm thinking, man, there's nothing more I could win. I'm too short. Some of these guys I beat took second and third Mr. Olympias, but that was them. That's not me, you know. I would have a tough time placing in the top six. In the year I retired, Carlos Rodriguez took sixth. I had just beaten him the year before. And long story short, I'm thinking, man, what do I have to do? Do I have to take a bunch of steroids and get bigger and still not win? This ain't for me. Mm-hmm. And so I just come home one day and I told Vicky, I don't know what I'm going to do. I think I'll sell the gym and sell cars. And she said, because I've always had cars, always had that car fever, always had from high school, the best cars. Mm-hmm. I was known for my cars. I purchased 3 Zs from, and I thought, well, this is what I'll do, man. So I call up the owner and I'm now and sell cars. And he says, Pat, we don't hire people. They don't have experience. And I said, well, I've set 6 world records. I'm 8-time national champion. I mean, I think I could beat anyone down there. And he says, can you start tomorrow?
You like that mindset, huh?
So I go down there, and long story short, you know, it takes me 3 months to be the salesman of the month, and then start working my way up, salesman, you know, assistant manager, used car manager, GM. After about 15 years, and this could never happen now, but you know, the owner had no children, and See, right now, if you wanted to buy a Nissan dealership, you'd have to have all that experience, and you'd have to be worth $25 million cash equity, mm-hmm. you know, back mm-hmm. then, just good credit, and you get a loan. And with my experience and who I was, the owner talked Nissan into accepting me and purchased a dealership, which is a dream come true. And and you know, took that dealership from 66 to third in the nation, and just all kind of the doors open up, and just luck, right place, right time, just hard work.
How many dealerships did you end up owning, Pat? Was it just that one, or did you own a few of them?
No, and two Nissan dealerships.
Two? Okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then in 07, they wanted to give me another one, but I didn't, you know, I was almost 60 years old, I think, and, you know, put another $20 million and open up a dealership. I didn't feel like doing that. So we had so many people here, and I'm talking about, literally, I met with four billionaires, Roger Penske, Wayne Hunsinger, Earnhardt's, met with four billionaires who wanted to buy the dealership. So it was fun in itself. So sold the dealerships and been retired ever since.
Wow, that's great. Well, let's get back to bodybuilding. The 1974 Mr. USA, that was your first big win. And I was just looking at the list of the people you beat. You were in the short class and you beat out Mike Kowach, but you also beat out Ernie Franz, who I remember because I grew up in Chicago, and Ernie was like one of the top power lifters.
He
was also a bodybuilder, yeah.
He had won the meet a couple of days before. They usually had the powerlifting meet with the Mr. USA, and he had won the...
And then in the medium class, you had Dave Johns, who went on to win the Mr. America a few years later. He won the medium class over Robbie Robinson, and then Richard Baldwin was third. So that was a lot of great stars in the making there.
Yep.
And then you won the overall. You beat out all those guys.
So I go to the Mr. USA because, you know, Bill Pearl and them convinced me to go. And so I get there, and we look around, and we're all standing before the prejudging. And David Johns comes up to me and says, it looks like you and I.
Yeah.
I look over in the corner, and I see this guy with this earring and this Hawaiian shirt tied in a knot on the bottom and bigger than hell. And I said, well, who's that big old guy? And David John says, I don't know, his name is Robbie Robertson.
And
I said, I'm going to go over there and talk to him. And I never forget this story, John. So I walk over there, and Robbie has one foot against the wall. He's standing up and he's leaning back, one leg up against the wall, leaning back, looking down because he's shy. He's shy.
Yeah.
You meet him. I walk up to him, and I'm standing right in front of him. I said, you know who I am? He's looking on. He gets a big old grin with that gold tooth that he had. He got that grin. He says, yeah, I know who you are. And I said, there's no way you could beat me. I said, look at my face. Look at my neck. I'm ripped to the bone, and you're way too big, man. And I never forget, this is exactly what he says, John. He says, yeah, you're going to beat me today, and you might beat me next time, but you're not going to keep beating me. I looked at him, and I said, probably. And so we have the contest and everything, and I go back to my room, and a few hours later, someone knocks on my door, and I open the door. It's the people with cameras, and we're here to interview you. We heard you won. I said, no, I didn't win. Probably the guy next door, that David Johns, probably won. He said, no, we heard you won. And, you know, being in a bodybuilding contest, you never know you won unless they hand you your first place. So, you know, I still wasn't sure. But, I go back there, and, you know, they call me out for best chest, best arms, every subdivision, my class, and in the overall contest. And quite a surprise, but I was in the best shape of my life.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. What a great story about Robbie. I didn't know he said that to you.
Oh, yeah. And so in a few months later at the 75 Mr. America, and I make some big improvements. And I go to the contest, and I have my clothes on, and people are running up to me. Man, have you seen Robbie? And I'm thinking, well, have you guys seen me? Mm-hmm. Have you seen Robbie? Have you seen Robbie? Well, I happen to go backstage, and Robbie's always back there, man. Half an hour before everyone else, pumping up. And he's back there. And, oh, my God, did he improve? And I said, oh, he finally got all that mass. He got it cut up. And,
yeah.
But I was cut up, and I was the best I've ever looked. And so I was fortunate to win my class and win best chest, best arms. And I took third overall. I think Robbie took fifth to win most muscular. But that was one of a great contest. And I think I lost the whole overall by a couple of points. And it was what it was.
Yeah, that was interesting, Pat, because they had the three classes, the short, medium, and tall class, height classes back then. This was the AAU. And but then for the overall, they had you guys like up against each other. So Dale Adrian, who won the medium class, and Robbie was second in the medium. He wins the overall, and then Clint Barile was second. You were third, and then Robbie was down in fifth. But like you said, Robbie won the most muscular. I remember he really created a lot of noise at that show because everybody was talking about Robbie. And then after that, I think Robbie went over to the IFBB.
Yep, that's what he did, and it's a matter of time. And real quick, this last story.
Mm-hmm.
We're all walking out of the AAU, and I always wanted to be AAU and NABBA. You know, I was the only Miss USA. There was no other Miss USA the year I won. Joe Wheeler hadn't on yet. One Miss USA, AAU Mr. America, NABBA Mr. Universe. That's the way you go, man. That's what Zane, that's what Arnold, that's what everyone did. And so I'm walking out of the contest, the AAU Mr. America. I'm holding my wife's hand. Robbie and his girlfriend are behind me. And Gene Mose, he was a photographer for Weider.
Right.
Weider is standing next to Lemo out front of the contest. He wouldn't come in the contest. And this Gene Mose, I think that's how you pronounce his name, he comes up to me and says, Mr. Weider wants to talk to you. My heart's pounding like the first time Arnold called me. And Vicky and I walk up to Joe. She's holding my hand. And the first thing Joe says, how would you like to go to South Africa? And Vicky squeezes my hand. He says, and I'll put you in pumping iron. Vicky squeezes my hand again. And I said, what do I have to do? He said, you have to come over and enter my show and enter in the IFBB. And I say, I wanted to try to win this NABBA, Mr. Universe. And he says, well, you come over to my organization and I'm sure you'll do well. And all I say, John, was I had a family, man. I was the only guy who had a family. And only Zane and I were married. And I had a good job at the hospital, doctor's hospital. And I said, I didn't even say money. I just said, how are you going to take care of me, Joe? What are you going to do for me? And man, he just looked the other way, like I said something bad. He got upset with me saying that. And he just looks behind me, and there's Robbie Robertson. Oh, no. Before I said, I just want to win this Mr. America. He said, from what I hear, you should have won tonight. He said, just come over to my show. And then I said, how are you going to take care of me? And then he looked at Robbie, and he just turned away. He never said goodbye to me. He just looked the other way, and he said, Robbie, come over here. And they went over in the corner and talked, and Vicky and I standing there holding hands, just standing there. We just walked away. And many, many years later, I kept thinking, did I pass up an opportunity to win Weider's Mr. America, maybe Weider's Mr. First? I beat those guys. I beat Birdsong, Danny Padilla. I beat Robbie. I beat all those guys. Maybe that would have been me. Had a part in pumping iron. Wouldn't have won nothing big, but maybe they have fame. No big thing. I would never been well off, but I always thought, oh, man, I really missed something. Years later, man, Robbie comes out with a book, writes me a letter, and in the book he told me he never had a contract. Every week he had to go and ask Joe for money. Like he told me, he said, like a little kid asking your dad, he said, I never knew how much he was going to give me. I never knew how much I could live on. He said, I did that for about 8 years, Pat.
Wow. Yeah. So you don't regret it then?
No way, man.
You don't regret it?
Okay. Because I would have never been in that car business. I would have wasted 5 or 6 years of my life. Who knows what a, I don't know, man. You could spin your wheels forever thinking you're going to get that.
Yeah. So then after that 75 America, then you went back again in 76, right? And that was held in Philadelphia. That was the bicentennial Mr. America, right? The one that was in the Cal Scalic one.
Yeah, I wasn't in shape. I got in a car accident a couple of weeks before the show. Mm. Hit from behind, broke two vertebrae in my neck, was in a brace. Barely worked out. Went in there the lightest I've ever weighed, even lighter than when I won Mr. Arizona. My lightest body weight, I mean, it was ridiculous. I was so thin, way off my shape, and won my class, beat Tom Platz, Ron Tufel, you know, beat some good. But was way off, and Kalman won. It was the most unbelievable trophy I ever seen in my life.
I remember that. Yeah. What'd you think of Kalman? That would probably be the first time you ever saw him, right? Because that was the first time he was ever in America.
First time I ever saw him, first time he ever saw me. He comes up to me, and he's thinking he's seen the Pat Nevey from 75. He don't know I'm literally almost 20 pounds lighter. But he walked up and he says, I know I could beat everyone here, but I don't know if I could beat you. And I said, well, we're going to find out. And I knew he would. And he was big as a house. He wasn't real cut. They would never let me beat someone that big. You know, even if I was in tip-top shape, I don't think they'd let me beat someone that big. But they did let me beat Clint for most muscular. But because I think I took third most muscular only because I'd lost so much weight from the accident. And Joe Means was, at that time, one of the most cut-up guys I've ever seen, and he deservedly won most muscular. He looked really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you think of Cal's legs? Because I, you know, some people criticized his upper body was so big, but his legs weren't as in proportion.
First off, high calves. You know, I'm not a guy too much about calves because I didn't have the best of calves, but he didn't have much legs. I mean, he was overwhelmingly impressive, and he was a good guy. He's a nice guy. But he came on that scene and was off that scene as fast as he came on.
Yeah, he came in like a rocket, right? Nobody ever heard of him, and then he wins the California and the America right away, first time.
Well, Bill Reynolds told me about him, you know. Bill Reynolds was the first editor to ever write about me, and I think I had a lot of influence in helping Bill get to be the editor of Muscle and Fitness. Bill did so many stories on me. Worked his way up and introduced me to Joe and had a good relationship with Joe. And he told me about Kalman, but I said, before I saw him, I thought, before that accident, you know, things were going real well. But it's part of the game. Injuries are part of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next year, Pat, you went over to the WBBG. So that was Dan Lurie's organization, right?
I go over there, and I got to be honest, I was real frustrated. What happened was, I had won the Mr. America class 75 and 76, the first man to ever do that back-to-back, win two classes. And so Bill Reynolds and Jim Mannion tell me, you know, their words, not mine. You're too good to enter America. You'll win your class the third time. That don't matter. We're making a new rule that you just, you could compete against the winner and you get to go to the universe. It was kind of like a pose down. And so long story short, Richard Baldwin, so I beat him in the pose on, so I get to go to the universe and training my ass off, just training. I never looked the best I ever looked, and Joe Weider calls me up and tells me they're taking me off the team. And
wow. What year was this, Pat, 76?
I think it was 77, I think, or 78.
Okay.
That's when I got upset and went to that Dan Lurie organization.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
I got so upset with Weider. And I mean, I literally, I thought it was the end of my life almost. You know, I begged, you know, I really felt that I would win the Never Miss Universe. It's the only way to get through there. You know, I said, Joe, this is my life. And then he says, oh, they turned you down. I said, who turned you down? He said, the president from, wherever the contest was being held, Belgium or somewhere, I can't remember. But I said, Joe, you could talk anyone in letting me go. I said, this is ridiculous. Right. Yeah, they heard you did some advertising for Dan Lurie and this and that. And I said, I got no money. I got no money for any of that stuff. And I couldn't convince him. And I don't know. There's many stories to go on about why it happened. I don't know. But yeah. It is. And so I go to Dan Lurie's show, and he treated me right. He was one of the first people that actually gave us any money, put us up in a room. And he was a good guy. He is a good guy. And I met a lot of people over there. And he was no Joe Weider, and his contests were no Joe Weider contests. But they were a good show, and a lot of people, and it was all East Coast people. And there were a lot of big names that came over that organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Sergio, I met Sergio there, and Serge Nubre.
Oh, really?
Tony Emmett.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Tell me about meeting Sergio.
Oh, my gosh. I said, yeah, I met Sergio. I'm in the dressing room taking my clothes off, getting ready to go out. And if I win this Pro Mr. World, which I thought I was going to, but Scott Wilson beat me. I had beaten him before, but he does look real good and does beat me this year. But anyhow, I'm getting ready to enter Mr. World. If I win, I go up against Sergio, which I know is going to beat me, but just the honor to go up against Sergio. But I'm getting undressed and everything, and I hear this high-pitched voice, and it's just like this. And this, he called me Nevis, and he goes, Sergio says, hey, Pat Nevis, you look real good. And I turn around, and this is a sight to behold. I feel stupid even saying it, but there's Sergio getting undressed. Sergio's down there naked in this locker getting undressed. So the first time meets Sergio, is he's naked in the locker room. And I turn around, I said, oh my God, what is this? What is this? Is this a cartoon character or what?
Right.
And that's how we met. And he was just so friendly and happy-go-lucky. Yeah. I mean, he knew he could beat anyone at this show, but that's the first and only time I met, and I don't know how he knew my name, but it was fun. And I entered the show, and Scott Wilson beat me, and so he went up against Sergio, and obviously, you know, Sergio beat him. But Sergio Bray was there, Tony Emmett, Anibal Lopez, a lot of good guys.
Yeah. What did you think of Sergio Bray?
Oh, God, he was beautiful, man.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, I'm talking from a bodybuilder, just probably the most beautiful body I've ever seen, man.
Yeah.
But he, in those poses, it was a Frank Zane with more muscle, you know, just those delts and arms and chest and waist. And oh, my God, he was really a gentleman, too. He was class.
Nothing really? But
God, he was class. I mean, it was an honor talking to him. He was a classy man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, Pat, when you tell me these stories, tell me you got going out to dinner with Arnold, and, you know, when I talk to a lot of the bodybuilders about the old days, and they talk about that, they talk about how really cool everybody was and how they were gentlemen and how they were good people, good men, you know.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl and Arnold and Sergio and Serge Nubre, you know, like all the guys you met here. It just, I hear that stories over and over again. Boyer Coe.
Yeah, I have Boyer stories. I mean, good men. And you hit it right on, John. I'm talking about good people. I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People who could have been your friends if you lived in the same state they lived in, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Competition or not, you know, I go, Joe Weider calls me up and wants me to judge the World Cup. I'm the only national bodybuilder who has a national card, and I qualify to judge the World Cup. And so it's in Santa Monica, and Vicky and I drive out there, and I'm sitting in the front row, and they introduce me. And there's a couple thousand people there, and all of a sudden someone taps me on the shoulder. I turn around, and it's the first time I ever met Frank Zane. And there's Zane in a red knit shirt, and he says, you look good, Pat. And I can't hardly open my mouth. I can't even talk. I look at Vicky, and I look at Vicky, and I say, it's Frank Zane. And she said, yes, it is. And I stand up real quick, and I shake his hand. And He says, I'll talk to you later. And he goes away. And I sit back down. I look at Vicky. I said, it's Frank Zane. Can you believe Zane knows who I am?
And, right.
So after that show, Robbie Robertson wins. After that show, I go to Gold's Gym. And Frank's working out. And he comes over and says a few words to me. And then we get in the shower. And we're taking a shower. I got to tell you this story, John. I look over at him. And I say to myself, and you know how bodybuilders are. I don't care who you are. You're always comparing yourself with someone else, man. That's how bodybuilders are, and that's how I am. And I say to myself, man, I could beat this guy. I don't know how he won all those shows. I could beat this guy.
Right.
So I say to myself, I could beat him. So then I leave. Then a few months later, I'm putting on some show, and I'm going to try to get Frank Zane to get pose. And I finally track him down. And he said, I don't like guest posing, but I'll guest pose for you, Pat. So he comes there, and he guest poses, and I say to myself, man, I could beat this guy. There's no doubt I could beat this guy. We go back to my house. We sit out back in my backyard for 3 hours straight, just he and I under the stars. We talk about everything in the world. To be one-on-one with Frank Zane, we just talk. I met him like 5 times, and all 5 times I said to myself, I could beat this guy. And then at the 79 Mr. Olympia, I'm in the back room. I'm backstage, and Ray Mensur says, Mike wants you to look at him. And I go look at Mike, and he looks incredible. I go, oh, man, I don't think you could be beaten. And I walk out of the room, and someone says, Frank Zane wants to see you, Pat. And all this time, you know, I'm thinking, oh, I could beat this Frank Zane. And I go in this room. I mean, ripped. First of all, I notice he's blacker than black. He's suntanned like a crazy man. So he's blacker than black. Every step he takes, veins, muscularity, ripped to the bone. Cut, I mean, just beautiful. And so he goes there, and Mensur is ahead of him at the prejudging, and Frank Zane comes back, and I just feel guilty, man. And so I did the guy did pass. I said, well, it's real close between you and Mike. We'll see tomorrow. And I said, Frank, I just got to tell you, man, every time I ever saw you, man, I thought, man, I could beat you, man. I could beat you. And now I know why you won all those shows, and you beat Arnold, man. Jesus Christ, you look good. And I never forget that he said this, especially coming from a school teacher.
Yeah.
The exact words he said to me, he said, you know, Pat, I don't care if my students come to class. I don't care if they come to class. But on the day of the exam, if they pass that exam, they're going to pass that class. And I want you to know something, Pat. You could beat me every day, but you cannot beat me on the day of the exam. I said, no, I can't, man. And I knew what he meant, and I carry that around with me. And right, man, the only day that counts is the day of that contest, you know.
Right.
The next night he came back and beat Mensur at the pose down and won the show. And it was just unbelievable. I think you were there at that show, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I was there in 79, yeah. Yeah, that was a great show because they had the Mr. Universe on Saturday. And then they had the Mr. International and the Mr. Olympia on Sunday. That was amazing. What a great weekend.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was that Frank Zane, he knew how to get those people to look at him. And he knew what angles he wanted to show you. And he made you look at those angles, you know.
Yeah.
And when he asked for that side chest, he didn't really give him a side chest. He gave him his version of the side chest. But
right.
He knew how to get you away from looking at Robbie and Mike Mensur. And it's a shame they went away from that body, but it looks like they're coming back to it.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
So the last show you really did, Pat, was 1982, right, when you went to the MPC Nationals. That was the first year they had the MPC, correct?
Yeah. I'm training, and I guess my training partner goes and enters the Mr. USA that Dale Ruppinger won. And he comes back and he says, yeah, this guy's really good, man. I think he could maybe beat him, though, but he's really good. And so I thought, one more chance to try to go to Universe, man. You know, I want this damn NABBA Universe. You know, I want to go over there, place or not place. I just want to go over there and, you know, see what I could do. And I get there and I go walking in and, you know, they're taking pictures of everyone, but I'm too tired. I'm too exhausted. I'm worn out. And so I get downstairs and I don't know if they're weighing us, I think, or height. I think it was weight.
Yeah,
it was waiting. So, this guy walks up to me, taps me on the shoulder. I turn around. I said, "How you doing, man?" He said, "Good." He said, "Man, I've seen you in all the magazines. You're one of the first guys that got me inspired." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "What's your name?" He said, "Lee Haney."
I said, "Well, wow."
I said, "Good luck to you, man." And then I see that Dale Ruppinger and I shake his hand and they're weighing us and everything, and I'm almost too exhausted to take my shirt off. I have a Swiss shirt on, and I'm standing there, and just Dale Ruppinger could see I'm kind of struggling to get this sweatshirt off, and he says, "Let me help you, man." And I don't know who he is, and he helps me get my shirt off, and as soon as I get my shirt off, I can see his eyes kind of get real big, and I still don't know who he is, and I go over there and weigh in, and later on that day, I realized that, you know, he's Dale Ruppinger, and he comes up to me, and he's such a gentleman. He comes up to me, and he says, "Man, it's an honor to compete against you." And I said, "Well, you look great, man." And so he won, and he went on and won the Universe. I think he got a perfect score, and I took second, and I knew that was going to be my last show. It had been a long time in between, you know. So,
how old were you at that show, Pat?
I think I was 37, I think.
Okay. Well, you've been doing it ever since you were, you're training ever since you were a teenager and then competing since you were in your 20s, right?
Yeah, it was, I because of powerlifting, I had so many surgeries, you know, tore my tricep, had many, many knee surgeries. I mean, it was getting really rough. I was tearing my pec in between, I was tore the insertions, you know, doing flies with 120 pounds and crazy stuff. And
wow, okay.
Injury after another, you know, it is time to go.
Yeah. Well, you had a great career. And then after that, like you said, you went on, you had a great business career, you know, with the car dealerships. So it sounds like you had a great life.
Never the smartest, but I really credited myself with being one of the hardest working. I mean, I worked, I never went from Mr. Arizona and saying I wanted to win Mr. USA. I never went from being a car salesman to being the GM. I just thought, man, the more cars I sell, the more money I'll make, and something good would happen from this. And, man, right time, right place, 15 years later, and to own a franchise like that was Mr. Olympia 10 times over, man.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, Pat, tell me a little bit about your wife, because you keep talking about Vicky, and I know you guys have been married a long time. So tell me a little bit about that relationship.
Yeah, we've been married like 47 years. I was in college. It's my second year in college, and she was a senior in high school, and she worked with a bunch of these guys and girls. And one of the guys was a friend of mine, and it was a semester break, and we were signing up for my second year in college. And she came down with a bunch of guys and girls to Glendale Community College, and these guys always say, "Oh, here comes the king, Mr. Arizona." I went to Alice Cooper. His name is Vincent, and he had his groupies, and I had my groupies, so I had the bodybuilding groupies, and he had the rockers, or whatever you want to call them. He had those groupies.
Oh, really? Wow.
And so we're standing on one side of the recreation hall, and long story short, so they bring Vicky up there, and one of the guys look at Vicky because she was the prettiest girl, and he said, "This is Pat Neve. He's the king." And she looks at me with this weird look, you know. She didn't know what Mr. Arizona means. She didn't know what this stupid king thing is, and she ignores me, man. She just ignores me. And so they leave, and this guy says, "God, that girl that was with those guys and those girls, that Vicky girl, wasn't she beautiful?" I said, "I didn't even notice." And so the next day, one of the guys who worked there, who's a friend of mine, who worked with Vicky, said, you know what girl I was with? I said, yeah, I kind of remember. She wants you to come over and play pool at her house. They have a pool table.
Hmm.
Said, oh, that's weird. Why would she want me to come over and play pool?
Said,
come on over, man. I want you to meet her. I'm trying to date her. I said, well, how would me meeting her help you?
Right.
Just come on, man. Just come on. So anyhow, I go over there, and he and I are playing pool, and she's sitting over there, and the more I look at her, the prettier she's getting, and I don't know. I go home, I call her back up, and the funny thing about it, John, when I call her up, I said, you know, this is that Pat Neavy guy who was playing pool. She said, yeah, yeah, the guy they called the king. She said, what is that all about? And I said, well, kind of embarrassed to tell you, man. You know, I entered some physique contest. She said, you don't tell me you get up there with those little shorts on. And yeah, I said, I'm kind of embarrassed to say, yeah, I did, man. And she said, I won a couple of titles. And she just kind of laughed about it, no big thing. And I said, would you like to go out? And she says, I have a date Friday. But you're talking to someone with a lot of confidence. I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll be at your house at 7 o'clock Friday. If you want to come out and meet me, I'll be out front. If you don't, I'll just drive away. And I just hung up, and I went over there Friday and in my 63 Chevy Impala, all customized, and pulled up in front of her house. And she comes walking out, and we go to the drive-in. That was it, man.
That was it.
47
wow,
years.
That's great.
Yeah. And I tell you, the main thing, John, is you already know the story. Behind every man is a great woman.
Yeah.
I mean, just the best. I mean, that talk about Arnold, I could look like that. You do look like that. To when I told her I was going to sell cars, never a moment of doubt. No matter what I told her, never, always behind me 100%. And going through this neck surgery I just went through, just couldn't make it without her. And just, man, just, people who get married, man, if you get the right one, it's a blessing, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congratulations on such a great career, Pat, and congratulations on such a great marriage. And it was really a pleasure talking to you. I grew up, like I said, reading the magazines and seeing you in all the magazines. So it was great to hear about your career from you and hear about all your stories with all these great legends in the sport.
Well, John, I gotta tell you, you're doing great for this sport, and you're helping a lot of people and doing these podcasts and getting these people to know us. I think it's great to keep this going, and good luck to you, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Yeah, I'm going to keep it going because I think it's important that the younger guys out there hear about the history of the sport, and especially from the people themselves like you, the ones who have been there and done it and, you know, lived the life and met all these legends in person, you know?
Well, it was just a day of working out, and we didn't know we were going to become legends, and it was just a bunch of guys working out. Like you said, John, just let's go to the gym and see how big we could get or how good we could get.
All for the love of the sport, really, just because we loved it, right?
I mean, we didn't even have money to get to the shows, you know.
Right.
We had to find sponsors to get. John Cole had to give me $500 to get to Mr. USA.
You know? Yeah.
I became a multimillionaire, and I never forgot that I had to get $500 from John Cole to go to the show. I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Pat, it was a pleasure talking to you. Maybe we can have you back on the show again one day, and thanks again for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you so much, my friend.
All right, Pat. Take care.
No.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you for listening to that interview with Pat Neave, and thank you to Pat for doing that interview with me and taking the time to do it. I know Pat just got done with a pretty serious neck surgery, and it took him quite a few weeks to recuperate, so I'm glad we were able to get that in. All right, as promised, I want to read this article to you guys. It's called The Complete Man, and it was in the February 1977 issue of Muscle Builder and Power magazine, and it was written by Rick Wayne, and it's about Frank Zane. So here we go. In the middle of one night in late September, shortly before the 1975 IFBB World Bodybuilding Championships in Pretoria, South Africa, Frank Zane awakes from a deep sleep He sits up in bed, runs both hands through his longish brown hair, gets up, walks wide awake in the semi-darkness to his study. He turns on the light, takes a small and leather-bound notebook from his desk drawer. The Seiko on his wrist says 2 a.m. Zane sits down to write. I park my car on a street, a regular street, at a parking meter. There are maybe one or two other cars on the street. I go off for a minute or so. When I return, my car is missing, vanished. Later, I discover Joe Weider has moved it to a huge parking lot where there are a lot of other cars. My car door is open and papers are spread all over the seats. And when I open the glove compartment, my wallet is still there with all my cash and my Bank America card. His dream recorded, Frank Zane returns to bed. The next day, he mentally relives his nocturnal experience. His mind's eye on red alert, perchance to focus on some small clue that might help him unravel the puzzle. But he can find no reasonable explanation. He'll have to wait until after the championship, some 2 months later, after he has been beaten into sixth place in the Mr. Olympia contest. Only then will he fully understand his dream. The car represented my physical body, my machine. Before I started training for the Olympia event, I was on my own course, working by myself for a degree, going to school and not training much. I was on a street by myself. So Joe Weider takes the body and he puts it in a contest with many other bodies. The papers in the car, well, I didn't get it together. I didn't win. I got messed up. But all that was valuable, how I feel about myself, my self-confidence, self-integrity, going into a show and competing the way I want, and not having to use psychological tricks and games. Those things are still with me, untouched, like my Bank America card and the cash in my dream. I'm still the same person that I was before my South Africa show. I didn't go against my principles, and my mind is not messed up. I can feel it all coming together now as I train for the 1976 Mr. Olympia. Lightheaded would hardly be an apt description of the man. A trifle introspective, perhaps. Certainly not prolix. He abhors hyperbole. He is perhaps one of the most erudite members of the bodybuilding fraternity, armed as he is with a degree of education and another in psychology. Still, dreams do play a significant role in the life and times of Frank Zane. We're sitting in my office at Weider International. It's been over 4 years since I talked with Frank Zane. The last time we were together, I was at the 1971 IFBB Mr. America, Mr. World, Mr. Olympia show in New York. He had put on a spellbinding exhibition at the show, riding the crest of a popularity wave, but still very introverted, reticent, almost diffident. Everybody dreams about 1,000 dreams a year, he tells me now, eyes unblinking behind steel-rimmed glasses. Trouble is, most people forget what they dream by the time they get out of bed. That's why I record my own dreams as soon as possible. I've been doing that for something like 4 years. Every 4 weeks or so, I look at my log, and it's sort of like a crossword puzzle, putting the pictures together. Then I get a complete picture that tells me very clearly that I never knew about myself. Frank Zane is into dreams to the extent that he also records the dreams of other people. This was Arnold's dream. In 1974, he dreamed I was in really fantastic shape and pumping up backstage with Franco Colombo, preparing to go on stage for the Mr. Olympia contest that year. Then Franco tells me he's got this fantastic new stuff that makes your body look incredible, and you put it on with a brush. So then he puts the stuff all over me. It's kind of a green and white checkered paint. I go out to pose, but then no one can see me. You see, the curtains are also green and white, same as me. The judges and the fans cannot make us out apart. I just blend into the curtains, and it's as if I'm not out there at all. All they see is Franco Colombo. And Arnold is just sitting there saying to himself, wow, what a shame. The guy's in the greatest shape ever and no one can see him. IFBB fans will recall it was in 1974 that Franco Colombo beat out Zane for the under 200 pounds Mr. Olympia title, as Zane later interpreted Arnold's dream. Here's how I saw it afterwards. Arnold and Franco both play a psychological game going into contests. I'm not into that at all. I don't believe in these psychological maneuvers like trying to make your opponent look bad when you're posing against them. I'm just not into that. I just come in looking as good as I can. But Franco, one of the things he does is that 700-pound deadlift. It's his way of winning over the audience. That little guy with so much power. So Franco goes over big with his big deadlift and then poses. When I come out to pose, people simply don't see me. I just become part of the curtains. Dane also has a more down-to-earth explanation for the night he lost to Franco Colombo in New York. I may have been just a little too light for that contest, but otherwise I could not have been in better shape. I guess a lot depends on the judges, what they're looking for in a particular night. I believe they prefer mass and clarity over shape and symmetry in New York anyway. In that contest with Franco, the judges included chiropractors, wrestlers. They even had a horse doctor on that panel. It's interesting to note that while Franco Colombo may be what the doctor ordered for New York, in Europe, Frank Zane is synonymous with physical perfection. In fact, both Frank and his wife of 8 years, Christine, have proved winners in London. Christine was voted Miss Bikini, the female version of the NABBA Universe, on the same night that her husband walked off with the Mr. Universe Award. Conversely, Franco Colombo has never been very popular with NABBA's judges. In London, he was beaten by both Boyer Coe and Chris Dickerson. Says Zane, "There's a different attitude in London. I think they look at you and decide, are you the best of your type? I guess they see me as good for what I am. There are different types of physiques. It just so happens that my type is more popular in London. In New York, it is practically impossible to defeat Franco. He's their type." Having won every available physique award save the Mr. Olympia, he beat Arnold Schwarzenegger in Miami, is Zane about to hang up his trunks? Not the way he tells it. "Right now, my aim is to get into the best shape of my life. I'm right on the top of a tremendous drive, and all I'm going to do is let my training take its natural course. I don't feel I have to do anything special. I'm not going to force myself to do anything. Last year, I really forced myself to compete in South Africa, and that turned out to be a big problem. I just want to harden up as much as possible, get extremely muscular, and then slowly gain weight to about 190 pounds. I'm not really shooting for a lot of body weight. 1 year, I was in New York weighing 180, very muscular and cut up. A year after, I weighed 195, and I was not as defined. A couple guys came up to me in New York, and they told me I looked lighter, even though I was 15 pounds heavier. Of course, they were judging for my appearance under the lights. When I'm lighter, the insertions are more indented. They seem to stick out more. They actually look bigger than what they really are. I've learned that you just can't try to be something you are not." Way back in 1964, shortly after we first met in New York, Frank Zane and I exchanged many training ideas via the mail. At the time, Frank was most concerned about the massive deltoids a la Scott and the 20-inch arms that seemed to take top prizes each time. Obviously, Zane has readjusted his training strategy. "You can't pretend to be a bulky guy if you are not," he contends. "I can't try to look like Franco or Arnold. I have to make it on symmetry and shape. I found I can build a fair amount of size, like 18.5 to 19-inch arms when I'm in top shape. It's just that I have not been able to, in the past, to spend as much time bodybuilding as I would love to, what with my teaching commitments. As for the 1976 Mr. Olympia, Arnold has retired," he says pointedly, "and it doesn't look like there are many really good big guys this year. That means a smaller guy will have a chance to be Mr. Olympia." What sort of training is Zane doing in preparation? At time of writing, he visits the gym just once a week, getting 6 rugged workouts each week. "But I will soon be pushing on 8 weekly sessions. By contest time, I'll be getting in 12. In the summer, I hope to train twice a day because then all I'll be doing is hard training. I may teach summer school, but that'll only be for 4 hours a day." Meanwhile, he takes a full spectrum of supplements, natural supplements like desiccated liver, yeast, lecithin, unsaturated oil, B-complex, C, the usual. "And I like the high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet. I have had much success taking small amounts of carbohydrates daily. I have quite recently discovered the usefulness of small amounts of carbohydrates taken throughout the day. I used to think it was best to leave carbohydrates out altogether, but now I know that's wrong." It is really quite dangerous to leave carbohydrates out of your diet, for it depletes the amount of sugar stored in your liver. The result is you don't get a pump. Most guys who do this are hypoglycemic and suffer from low blood sugar. You can tell them by their eyes. I had a 6-hour glucose tolerance test, and I found I tend to be hypoglycemic, but not extremely so. I'll tell you how I use carbohydrates. I use starches and the more complex carbohydrates. Instead of the simple sugars like potatoes, yams, and rice, I'll have a baked potato with some cottage cheese and herb tea in the early morning, and then I'll go to the gym for my workout. Later at breakfast, when I have my protein meal, it'll be some form of beef patty with some cheese and a slice of baked potato. For lunch, I have the same thing, basically, or maybe some tuna. Then at night, I'll have maybe a small salad. At weekends, I usually increase my food intake. His actual training program is guided by a Bill Pearl precept. Why use a heavy weight when a lightweight will do just as well? In other words, says Zane, I do not employ heavy poundages unless that is what the exercise calls for. When I'm peaking for a show, I do force repetitions with the heavy poundages. But normally, I just enjoy my workout with reasonable weights that allow me a smooth training style. I like to be able to concentrate on the action of the exercise. There are exercises that I simply won't perform. For example, I stay off squats and leg presses. I don't need them at this stage in my career. Running, leg curls, and leg extensions take care of my thigh needs. But I must explain so that I'm not misunderstood by beginners and other guys for whom heavy work is imperative. My legs have always responded well to training. They've always been my best body part. If I bomb them now with heavy poundages at this point in my career, they would just balloon out of proportion. But I do a heck of a lot of calf work. High on Zane's list of do's and don'ts are bent over rowing and leverage back pulls, or T-bar rows. I don't do presses behind my neck either, he discloses. These exercises have injured my lower back in the past. I might do them again, but it would require a lot of preparation so that the once damaged areas might be strong and fit enough to take the work. When you don't train hard year-round, when your work forces you to take breaks every now and again, well, then you shouldn't just jump at heavy poundages without preparation. Frank Zane takes 2 months off training after a contest. To recuperate from his last Mr. Olympia regimen, he took 10 weeks. But I came back easily, thanks to a good diet that I stayed on even though I was not in training. Last February, he appeared at the Whitney Museum of Art in New York with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Ed Corney. It really was a fantastic experience, he said. The first time they staged anything like it at the museum. 1,600 people came in, but unfortunately another 600 had to be turned away. There was a revolving platform about 5 feet in diameter at the center of a very large room, and we posed on that one at a time. We had a panel of distinguished art critics who discussed whether or not bodybuilding is an art form. Really, what they said was quite academic. There was an elaboration about art and sculpture, and they asked us if we felt bodybuilding was a legitimate art form or not. We told them bodybuilding is definitely an art form, body sculpture. In fact, backstage, they had this tire casing that was cut in half with some metal rods sticking out of it. And this was sculpture, according to some of those present. So why can't the trained body be seen as a work of art? It is high time bodybuilding is recognized universally, not merely as a sport, but also as a legitimate art. And indeed, it is. In between teaching mathematics at Mark Twain Junior High in Venice, studying for higher academic qualifications, contests, and stage appearances, Frank Zane still manages to indulge his hobby. Oh yes, Arnold and I still do a lot of archery. He's become quite good at it too. In fact, we filmed some archery for the Pumping Iron movie. Christine Zane works out 3 times a week apart from teaching 6th grade, and she is a past winner of the coveted Miss Americana Award. But there are no children at time of writing. Having come this far, it must have been a disappointing setback to lose in South Africa, right? Wrong. I almost expected the result. I was not myself. Too many things had not gone right. It was a much bigger disappointment losing in London in 1971 to Bill Pearl. I won the NABBA Amateur Universe title the year before. When I posed then, it was, well, an uplifting experience. They carried me off the stage at the end of my presentation. But when I lost to Pearl, I remember thinking how unfair it had been because they never compared us. They could have looked beyond the headlines or the word that Pearl was back. They refused to see beyond that, and it really disappointed me. All along, I had considered that contest the fairest of all. But after that Bill Pearl affair, I sort of lost my high ideals that I had at the time. However, I did return in 1972 and won, only somehow it was not quite the same for me. Frank had an inner feeling that the 1976 Olympia title would be his when he began training for it weeks before the summer began. But one night, about a month before the contest, Frank's subconscious mind went to work. Dressed in black, he stands on a platform, a chopping block at his feet. He holds a huge axe in his hands. People begin to gather, quickly turning into an unruly mob. A muscular man is led up the stairs to the block. A cloth covers his head. He is placed in the proper position. Methodically, Frank's mighty arms raise the axe overhead. In a split second, it is over. The mob roars its approval. The head rolls to the ground. As the mob begins to disperse, Frank lifts the cloth off the blood-soaked head. He must see the face of this man. He sinks to his knees when he realizes what he has done. He has decapitated Rick Wayne. Frank Zane awakens immediately. A cold, clammy sweat engulfs his entire body. He stares into the darkness in disbelief, unable to comprehend his latest foray into the innermost workings of the mind. When word of my freak neck and shoulder injury reached Gold's Gym, Frank was in the middle of his afternoon workout. The pieces all came together. Would things have been different if he had told me about the nightmare? It was too late now. Nothing could change that. Shortly before the Olympia date, Frank's positive feelings of being number one were upset. Yes, another dream. Only this one was very clear. The contest would be the closest ever, but Franco would emerge the winner. Having this prophetic vision so near the day of reckoning surely must have made it easier for Frank to accept his own defeat as well as Franco's victory. But then Frank always had been a model competitor. Mr. America, Mr. World, Mr. Universe. Articulate, intelligent, affable. Wow, is there a more privileged class than that at Mark Twain Junior High? I teach PE class 3 times a week, teacher says. I suppose my bodybuilding reputation has a particularly big effect on the youngsters because of their age. Early teens. All they're concerned with at this time is identity. I was that way at their age. That was when I first discovered bodybuilding. I must have been about 14 years old. John Frobutnik on the cover of Muscle Builder magazine did it for me. I've always had the notion that a person should not only be developed mentally, he should also strive for physical perfection. Be a well-rounded individual. A complete person, a good athlete too. Not like some guys who are very well developed but slow in movement and thinking. Not like others who are concerned strictly with the intellect and couldn't care less about how they look, their health. Certainly, Frank Zane is no numbskull. Neither is he all brain and nothing else. He is doing our sport a whole lot of good in the United States and the many foreign countries that he visits annually for the IFBB. He deserves our applause, and henceforth, may all his dreams have happy endings. All right, that is it. That's our article for the week, written by Rick Wayne in the February 1977 issue of Muscle Builder magazine. Thanks for that great article, Rick. We really enjoyed his writings. I love reading his writings, his articles when I was a kid. All right, folks, that's it for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed our interview with Pat Neve and also the reading of the article. Thanks again to Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Enjoy your week, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.